This is Edwin Newman inviting you to Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is the President of the Republic of Tunisia, Habib Bourguiba, who is in this country on a state visit to President Johnson. He led his country's fight for independence from France and became the first Prime Minister of independent Tunisia in 1956 and the first President in 1957. President Bourguiba will speak in French, and you will hear his answers by simultaneous interpretation. We'll have the first questions now from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. President, do you see much chance today for a peaceful settlement between Arabs and the Israelis?
Before I answer your question, Mr. Spivak, I should like to recall in the first instance that 7 years ago, exactly in the month of May, I was the guest of NBC on the occasion of a Meet the Press meeting. Unfortunately, my ailing health prevented me to be present at the appointment. I'm therefore particularly happy today with a somewhat protracted delay, unfortunately, that I'm in a position to honor this appointment with Meet the Press and the American public. As far as your question is concerned now, I deem it that a peaceful solution is only possible if a fair and acceptable compromise can be worked out between the two parties, the Palestinians on the one side and the Jewish people on the other, without recourse to war. Now, unfortunately, war has broken out for more than 20 years. Therefore, you have those who have won and those who have lost. There is an element of frustration which does not facilitate compromise. And therefore, I continue to feel that if a peaceful solution is to be found, one should take into account not only the needs of the Jews to have their own territory, but also to seek the solution which enables the Palestinians and the Jews to ensure their existence, their standard of life, and respect and satisfaction of their most elementary rights to progress and development.
Well, now, Mr. President, Israel says that direct talks with the Arab nations is the only road to a Middle East settlement. Are you today opposed to direct talks?
You know that as far as the direct talks are concerned, what is understood thereby are negotiations with the Arab states at war with Israel. States, for reasons proper to themselves, do not want to discuss directly because they feel that they had discussed in 49 and no results were achieved. I'm not speaking of the war between Israel and the other Arab states. This war itself has come about and intruded upon the problems within the territory where you have problems between two communities, the Arab community, which has been living there for more than 2,000 years, and the Jews who have come there as a result of immigration. Therefore, this is the problem of two nationalisms struggling with each other within the same territory, and the problem is to find a compromise acceptable to both, and that is the only way that a peaceful solution may be found, and the problem of Israel and neighboring Arab states would lose any particular influence.
Does that mean, Mr. President, that you are in favor of direct talks or against them?
I say that I always discuss directly when I was involved. For example, I had my struggle with French, but it is not my opinion which will prevail. Those directly concerned are the ones who have to decide. I certainly do not have the necessary qualities to advise or instruct the Arab states or the Jews or the Palestinians. But as a peaceful solution, which may be worked out, I did say on what basis a compromise can be considered as acceptable and will put an end to frustrations, confrontations, and the war that has lasted for more than 20 years.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Please remember, questions of the panel members do not necessarily reflect their own point of view. Here is our moderator, Edwin Newman.
Resuming our interview on Meet the Press, our guest today is the President of the Republic of Tunisia, Habib Bourguiba, who's in this country on a visit to President Johnson. You've just met Lawrence Spivak. The other reporters on our panel are Roland Evans of the Chicago Sun-Times, George Weeks of United Press International, and Dean Brailis of NBC News. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Evans.
Mr. President, you just spoke of your struggle, your successful struggle as a nationalist leader with the French. What advice would you have, sir, for Ho Chi Minh and the North Vietnamese in their struggle with the United States?
Yes, I have led the struggle against the colonial regime in Tunisia for some 35 years, or 35 years ago, and almost at the same time, Mr. Ho Chi Minh led a similar struggle against French colonialism in Indochina. And we had many things in common with respect to the methods used in our struggle, the sense of compromise, the proceeding by stages. And that is why I felt it necessary some 2 months ago to send him a letter to recall what we had in common, and to draw his attention on certain truths which he had to keep in mind in order to put an end to this war. I cited some of these paragraphs in the speech I made at the reception given by President Johnson. The advice I gave was to take into account, of course, the interests of Vietnam, not to play consciously or unconsciously the interests of other great powers who are not interested in peace, and in those circumstances, the interest of Vietnam, at the moment when the United States say that they do not wish to remain in Vietnam following peace, and once the peace is assured, to believe it, the United States, and to construct peace on this basis of independence and self-determination in order to maintain a system of balance with all the great powers, the United States, the USSR, France, etc. So that if there is a complete evacuation of the United States troops, the Vietnamese people should not find itself in a worse position. Therefore, peace as soon as possible on sound basis of independence and not in favor of Cold War or to have take steps which might make prevail the policy of the doctrine of Mao Zedong.
Mr. President, you would agree, though, that if the United States withdrew from South Vietnam, that the North would, in fact, take over that country. Do you not, sir?
It depends how they withdraw, you see. If they are sure that the conditions for self-determination exist, there is no danger of breaking the balance. What certain great powers seek on the basis of their intransigent position is to break the balance and to undermine the conditions which may be interpreted as a capitulation of the United States. Neither the United States will accept that. That is quite obvious, and it is not in the interest of the Vietnamese people.
Mr. President, officials of both the Pentagon and the State Department have been telling Congress recently that a massive Soviet arms buildup in Algeria threatens the stability of its North African neighbors. Do you share their concern on this and on the Soviet naval buildup in the Mediterranean?
Yes, I have answered this question on a number of occasions. I concede that peace throughout the world, and more particularly in the Mediterranean area, is based on a balance, of antagonistic forces or forces which might become antagonistic. The increase of Soviet forces in the Mediterranean area undermines this balance, or should one necessarily conclude that war will take place, I obviously cannot answer you, because those who are most responsible for the maintenance of this equilibrium, the powers of NATO, have not shown undue concern of this beginning of the disappearance of this equilibrium. And therefore, why should I be more concerned than they are, who are more directly concerned?
Mr. President, many people in this country advocate U.S.-Soviet agreement on on ending the Mideast arms race. And some go so far as to suggest creation of a joint U.S.-Soviet commission to study the influx of arms. Would you favor such a proposal?
It would be a most interesting idea. But if the situation in the Middle East is not explosive by itself, and if the Soviet Union accepts to see calm and harmony prevail in the Middle East. Now, peaceful coexistence does not mean that the Soviet Union accepts the equilibrium which exists or existed in the Middle East. Coexistence merely means not to have recourse to war. Whenever they find means to raise one against another, to exploit frustration and injustice or hatreds, they do not hesitate, especially when it doesn't cost them anything. On the contrary, it means that they can sell planes, sell cannons, and then to be a winner no matter what is done. Therefore, it is necessary for the Soviet Union to accept this, and this is not the case and does not appear to be probable. And secondly, the equilibrium in the Middle East, in order to be stable, should translate realistically a state of balance in the minds concerned and be not vitiated at the base by injustices, victories, and defeats.
Mr. Braless. Mr. President, earlier in this program, you talked about the Jews in terms of negotiation with the Palestinians. Yet when you talked about the Arab nations, you talked about Israel. Would you explain, sir?
Because for the Palestinians, the Israelis are Jews. There were Zionists at one time. There are Jews who are not Zionists. I don't know whether there are Zionists who are not Jews. This is probably also a possibility in certain countries. But I do consider that in this competition, or you might say this struggle, to secure a fatherland within the same territory, it would be good if the Jews in Palestine, who are from Europe or Africa or Asia, can find an acceptable compromise which enables them to enjoy the privilege of this territory as a fatherland, either within a common or joint state or within two separate states, as decided by the United Nations in 1948. At any As far as the Arab states are concerned in Israel, there is a new fact since November last, in that both agree to settle the problem on the basis of the Security Council decision of last November. Therefore, I do not see why this decision of the Security Council is not implemented, because both parties had accepted it. One sort of palavers on what should come first, the chicken or the egg, whether evacuation should start before an agreement on the borders, or the borders should come first before the free passage in the Straits. I believe that one can conceive a program where one can move slowly, simultaneously, to implement the obligations of the Arab states and the State of Israel, taking into account the decision of the Security Council under the auspices of the United Nations and under the authority of the Security Council and the four great powers.
In this regard, Mr. President, if the State of Israel returned all of the lands that she captured in her victory of last summer's war, Do you then think that the Arab nations would recognize Israel?
I cannot speak on behalf of the Arab states, but if I base myself on their statements, the statement of the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Egypt, they said that they accept the decision of the United Nations, which include the peace with Israel, the border question as a whole, in its entirety, evacuation and recognition, evacuation and peace, and even the freedom of movement, even in the Canal of Suez, in the Gulf of Aqaba, etc. The essential matter is to settle what may be called the timing, so that suspicion is eliminated. At the present time, everyone fears that if he implements the decisions which are incumbent upon him in terms of obligations, the other doesn't follow through. Mr. Jarring is there to settle the question of timing of the total implementation of the decision of the Security Council in its entirety.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. President, I know you can't speak for other Arab countries, but you can speak for Tunisia. Under what circumstances would you, as president of Tunisia, be prepared to recognize Israel?
If peace between the Israelis and the Palestinian Arabs, in other words, the Palestinian people, the first victim of this massive immigration, of the creation of a state within a state, if an honorable and acceptable compromise is worked out, there is no reason for me not to recognize the agreement of the parties concerned, that is, the Arab states and the State of Israel, with respect to a federal or confederal state, or the state, or the states, which would have been the subject of an agreement of all concern. In other words, on the Palestine question, especially with respect to the population in Palestine.
Mr. President, do you seriously believe that a solution of the problem between Israel and the Palestinian Arabs would solve the problem between Israel and Nasser?
I believe that the problem between Israel and Nasser is an ancillary of the problem within Palestine. The Palestinians felt that the Nasser, who was the head of a state, which is the most important one, the strongest one, could help them to free their country. Following several unfortunate experiences, and which is followed through at the present time, it appears that the Israelis can rely upon themselves, and they try to resist this type of colonization through population, which we have known in Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco, and other African countries, and where the white emigration new emigration creates a state by itself and leaves or casts aside the indigenous population, the autochthonous population, and therefore we witness a classical struggle in favor of decolonization of Palestine, and I believe that it will finally be decolonized if the problem is presented as a phenomenon of colonization and coexistence of two ethnic groups, two peoples who struggle over the acquisition of the same territory. I believe that this territory can accommodate both. How can they live together within the same state or two different states, depending on the events, the resistance of the Palestinians, the maturity of the Palestinians, the Zionists, who are a little bit, you might say, overly inspired by their victory, will lead them toward a honorable compromise, and they will be able to concentrate on the coexistence and the maintenance of human rights for both populations on the territory of Palestine.
3 minutes left, gentlemen. Mr. Evans?
Excuse me. Specifically, Mr. President, do you see any reason to think that Israel at the present time is prepared to evacuate the conquered territories on the west bank of the Jordan River, what used to be Jordan?
I said a while ago that I could not speak even for the Arab state, so how can I speak for the state of Israel? I can do it even less. What they want to do, what they want to evacuate, I really cannot know, nor can I comment upon it.
Mr. Weeks.
Mr. President, President Nasser has accused you of pursuing a pro-Western, anti-UAR policy in order to receive Western assistance as the leader of a country that receives more U.S. aid in Africa than any other. How would you reply to such a charge?
I never took very much into account such accusations. I could have accused them of following a policy in favor of the Soviet Union to receive aid from the Soviet Union. And that has led to disaster. Western policy, pro-Western policy, pro-United States leaves me free when I would like to break my relations with the United States to do that and to turn against the United States. Whereas the policy of satellization with Soviet Union cannot be suddenly upset so easily by Mr. Nasser, and he will not be able to come with the United States. I am much freer when I am friend of the United States than those who are friends of some other countries.
Mr. Braless.
Mr. President, how much influence does General de Gaulle have today in your country, Algeria, and Morocco?
Excuse me, Monsieur le President, 1 minute.
We have appreciated very much the policy of decolonization of General de Gaulle. It is thanks to him that Algeria was decolonized, which was the most difficult page of history for the French people. This is an orientation which has been welcomed by all the colonial countries. This is why he has enjoyed such a popularity in Tunisia.
Mr. Spivak, 30 seconds.
Mr. President, the New York Times reports that you ban miniskirts from your country. Your women must be easier to order around than ours. How did you do it?
I have never prohibited. It's not through interdictions of this type. I merely asked in a televised interview that women and girls do not exaggerate.
I'm sorry to interrupt, especially at that point. thank you, President Bourguiba, for being with us today on Meet the Press. Our thanks also to our two interpreters. I'll tell you about next week's guest in just a minute after this message.
For a printed copy of today's interview, send 10 cents in coin in a stamp, self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013.
Next week on Meet the Press, our guest will be the governor of California, Ronald Reagan. Now this is Edwin Newman saying goodbye for President Habib Bourguiba. and Meet the Press.
Most girls are ambitious. They want to make the most of themselves, of their abilities and talents. They want to develop both brains and beauty, knowing that both are most important in today's world. Now, how to do this? Well, one way is to go to the Girls Club, a place full of exciting activities open every day after school. The cost is so little as to be almost nothing. At the Girls Club, a life is enriched through classes in many of the arts and crafts and the homemaking arts and all kinds of sport. Girls have fun while learning. Girls Clubs of America ask adults to help give these benefits to girls by serving the club in any way it needs help, as a teacher, as a clerical worker, receptionist, or a program planner. Adults will be just as welcome as the girls are at the Girls Club.
Hi, this is Brad Crandall, your regular Sunday Night Monitor host. We'll begin right after the upcoming news on the hour, and among our guests this evening, actress Shirley MacLaine explaining her many extra activities.
I'm not one of those people who can sit back and enjoy my turquoise swimming pool and my Cadillac, and that's the answer. That's the end of it. I'm just not made that way.
Another guest, author Norman Mailer, defining the so-called New Left.
The New Left right now has a large potential to be an extraordinary movement or a god-awful movement, because it's got both elements in it at the moment. I mean, there's some wonderful kids in it, and there's some kids in it who are just literally fascist turned inside out.
Interesting personalities, news, music, comedy, sports. Something for everyone in the family. Stay tuned for news, followed by Monitor, perfect at home or on the road.
Join us each Sunday for news in the making as the nation's top reporters put challenging questions to world leaders on Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air. This is the NBC Radio Network.